7 of the Act as it is now provides that a child under the age of 10 years does not have criminal capacity and cannot be prosecuted. And a child who is 10 years old but under the age of 14 is presumed to lack criminal capacity unless the state proves that the child does have a criminal capacity. The Act further provides it as it is now. Section 8 allows for the review of the minimum age of criminal capacity as it is now after 5 years from the commencement of the Act. Section 8 also requires the minister to compile a report regarding the review on the minimum age of criminal capacity. Section 96(5) of the Act then sets out what information should be contained in this report, which includes statistics on the offences and sentences committed or within a specific then, after providing the report, the minister is required to submit the report to Cabinet for approval and then to Parliament for consideration. Slide 5 basically briefly looks at combining the report that I'm referring to. So combining that report, a competitive workshop was done, which included the experts in the working in the minimum age of criminal capacity. And the main findings of the report was that statistics indicate that very few children between the ages of 10 and 11 are found to be in conflict with the law. And also scientifically, the research found that on the research, scientific research on the brain indicates that the development of the prefrontal cortex is not achieved until the early 20s. And this scientific research plays a role in the decision on the establishment of the criminal age of on the minimum age of criminal capacity. The report also noted that the African Charter on the Human and Civil Rights Principles and Guidelines, which was issued as early as 2003, urges state to set the criminal capacity not below the age of 15. And as a result of these guidelines, some of the African states have increased the minimum age of criminal capacity to 18, and some countries have increased it to 16 and 15. But then, despite this, the report recommends that the minimum age of criminal capacity be raised to 12 years. Because the report, the people who compiled the report were of the view that it will be too much of a leap if the age is increased from 10 years to 14 years without tangible evidence of the effectiveness of the programs that are offered to children who are said to lack criminal capacity. But then the report also recommended that the minimum age of criminal capacity may also be reviewed again after 5 years. So slide 6 basically summarizes the report and the recommendations of the report. The report recommended that the minimum age of criminal capacity be increased from 10 years to 12 years. Be retained for the children who are 12 years under the age of 14. The report further recommended that the provisions in the Act which require the state to prove criminal capacity for purposes of diversion and preliminary inquiry should be removed as it has unintended negative consequences for children. The report was presented, was approved by Cabinet in February 2016 and then was department briefed a joint sitting of the committee in September 2016 on the report. The committee also requested the department to consult the National House of Traditional Leaders, which the department did, and then submitted to the portfolio committee the report of the consultation with the National House of Traditional Leaders, and also the list of civil societies specializing in children issues. And looking at the bill itself now, the main amendment is in clause 4 of the bill, which amends section 7. Section 7 is the section of the Act which deals with the minimum age of criminal capacity. So to give effect to the recommendations of the report, section 7 of the Act is then amended to provide that a child under the age of 12 years does not have criminal capacity. And a child who is 12 years old but under the age of 14 is presumed to not have criminal capacity unless the state proves that the child has criminal capacity. So as a result of this amendment to section 7, it necessitates a number of constitutional amendments to other various sections of the Act to substitute the reference to a child who is 10 years to substitute that with 12 years. And these clauses are listed there, clause 1, 3, 6, 7, up to clause 24, which contains just a consequential amendment of substitution of the age. And then the amendment that deals with improving criminal capacity for the purposes of diversion and preliminary inquiry was informed or motivated by two main issues that were identified in the report. One of it is that the unintended consequences in the implementation of the presumption. It appears that since the Act came into operation, most magistrates are not certain whether they can make a decision on criminal capacity without referring the child for evaluation in terms of section 11 of the Act. As a result of this, most children are referred for a evaluation in terms of section 11. And it is found that these children are unnecessarily exposed to mental health system, which is not in the best interest of the children. And the second issue was the practical challenges, which is also related to the first one, that as a result of the fact that many of the children are now referred for the evaluation of criminal capacity, this results in the clogging of the criminal capacity because there are not many competent persons who are available to do the evaluation. So cases are delayed as a result of that. This also exacerbates the burden on the already strained mental health system. So it was on the basis of these two issues that the report recommended that the provisions requiring the state to prove criminal capacity for purposes of diversion or purposes of preliminary inquiry be removed in the Act. And these amendments are in clauses 7, 15, and 17, which amend section 10, 41, and 49 to remove the provisions that require the prosecutor or the preliminary inquiry to consider criminal capacity of a child when considering diversion. Then a provision is inserted then in these sections to require that the preliminary inquiry or the prosecutor must, when considering diverting a child, instead of considering criminal capacity, just make sure that he or she is satisfied that the child will benefit from diversion. Clause 8, which amends section 11 regarding proving criminal capacity, is amended to substitute the age from 12 to 12 years, and is also amended to deal with this issue of removing the requirement to prove criminal capacity for purposes of diversion. So the reference to inquiry rate and preliminary inquiry is removed in section 11. Then clause 19 amends section 58 of the Act, which deals with the issues where the child fails to comply with diversion. Now, because the requirement to prove criminal capacity has been removed for purposes of diversion, subsection 5 is inserted in clause 58 to require that if the child fails to comply with criminal capacity, the state must first prove criminal capacity if the matter is to go to a child justice court. Clause 13, 14, and 15 of the bill amends the sections that are only intended to improve the implementation of the Act. Section 35 of the Act requires the probation officer to express a view on the criminal capacity of a child. And we have been informed that a probation officer is not qualified to express an opinion on criminal capacity. So section 35G is deleted. Again, section 41F of the Act require the probation officer to include a recommendation in the assessment report on the criminal capacity. And again, the same issue applies that the probation officer is not qualified to express a view on criminal capacity, so that subsection is also deleted. Section 43.2A also require a magistrate during a preliminary inquiry to consider the recommendations of the probation officer on criminal capacity. That section is also deleted. Then clause 1, 25, and 26 are technical amendments relating to the definition of appropriate adult. The definition in the Act as it is includes a sibling or a family member who is 16 years or older, which is not right, because the definition of a child is a person under the age of 18. So it including a person who is 16 years or older as an adult is not correct. So that definition is amended to read appropriate person. And it is amended like that to still cater for children who are living by themselves or children who are living in child-headed household. Clause 18 is also intended to improve the implementation of the Act. Clause 18 amends section 52 of the Act, which contains factors that must be considered for purposes of diversion. And one of those factors is that the magistrate or who is considering diversion must make sure that there is a prima facie case against the child. And it has been said that this can be interpreted to include a proven criminal capacity. So that phrase is substituted by a phrase, prima facie evidence that a child committed an offense, which will facilitate the child being referred for diversion if the child acknowledges responsibility. Clauses 24, 25, and 26 of the bill are also technical amendments. They are linked to the increase of the criminal capacity. Some of the headings of the sections have been amended, so the sections are the headings in the arrangement of the sections in the Act are amended, and clause 25 amends other sections in other acts that refer to appropriate adults, which have been amended to refer to appropriate persons. And then clause 28 is just a short title and the commencement of the bill. to be proclaimed by the president. This is to allow the regulations, the cabinet legislation that has been passed in terms of the act, like regulation, national instruction, which we will be referring to 10 years and 12 years to be amended. Thank you, Chair. Back to the charger.
Thank you.
Legislation is based on that report.
Then I would like to just ask.
Honorable Sir, what to this?
Yes.
Now,
is it a very lengthy report? Okay.
They say about the staff. Like the.
Okay. That's good. Then I want to just ask about the issue of why the words cognitive development, cognitive ability removed from clause 5. It's an amendment to section 10. And then I would also like to ask, concerns were previously raised about adults using children to commit crimes, and there is that clause that makes that in itself a crime by raising the age. Will that not aggravate that situation? And then there have been issues around that allegations, or I don't know if there's scientific fact, that from one decade to the next that children are in fact maturing earlier. Is there any data about that? If that is the case, then why are we raising the ages? Because remember now we have raised it, it was 7, we raised it to 10, 7 was unacceptable, it was raised to 10, then it was raised to 12, and now it's or to 10, and now it will go to 12 to 14. 12 to 14 will be the rebuttable presumption. Some of our other legislation allows children at the age of 12 to take very, very far-reaching decisions, such as termination of pregnancy at the age of 12, without parental guidance. Chair, thank you. That's all for the time being. Thank you.
Okay. For now, thank you so much. For now, there is no response. Maybe you can pull up questions.
On the question regarding the deletion in section 35 of the case, section 35G as it is as it stands now requires a probation officer when assessing a child to express a view on whether the child has criminal capacity or not. So we have been informed, perhaps Dr. Baden-Holtz will speak more to that, that probation officers are not qualified to assess the criminal capacity of a child, as it is provided in section 11 that the criminal capacity must be assessed by a competent person, and the Act requires the minister to determine who are those, and those have been determined as psychologists and psychiatrists. So the probation officer, from their training, they cannot pronounce on the criminal capacity of a child. So that is why that particular subsection is deleted. And then on appropriate adult, the definition in the Act includes that a person who can assist a child as an appropriate adult is a person, includes a person who is a sibling or a family member who's under the age of 16 years. But then the definition of a child in terms of the Act again is a person under the age of 16. So you see that the definition of an appropriate adult includes a child. But that this was informed by the fact that they are child who are living on themselves. So if a younger brother is arrested, the child must be able to be assisted by another brother who may be 15 or 16. So that's why a family member or a sibling under the age of 16 was included in the definition. But then it is not correct to refer to the appropriate with the child. So the definition is amended to refer to an appropriate person, which will then cater for a sibling or a family member who's under the age of 16.
Can I ask a question about that too? I'm sure that the intentions are very good, but I'm very concerned that a child is already in such trouble that it's in conflict with the law at that young age, being assisted by another child. I mean, surely our legal system can do better than that. How do you have a child of 15 or 16 who is really not an adult and can't be expected to be one, having to assist a child that's already in such trouble? I mean, we must be able to do better than that.
Can I respond?
Yes, please.
As the definition is in the Act, it refers to an appropriate adult.
Yes.
And if you look at the definition as it stands, it refers to a sibling who is 16 years or older. So a 16-year-old cannot be regarded as an adult. So in the definition itself, there was a mistake.
I understand that.
So we're trying
but
to...
That's not my... I understand what you're trying to fix. But that's not my difficulty. My difficulty is how can you have a child of 16 or younger than 16 who's already in such trouble being assisted by somebody who's 16? What kind of assistance are they going to get? And how is that 16-year-old supposed to cope? We've got to be able to do better than that, surely.
The process of including an appropriate adult was to assist the child when, perhaps when if arrested and going to court. But for purposes of assisting a child in court, there is still a provision for legal representation. It's just for that person to be there with the child.
This appropriate person just for to accompany the child.
To accompany the child and to support the child.
Well,
but for purposes of a child appearing in court.
But someone 16 years
yes.
older.
Okay. Now then I'm gone.
There is a provision for legal representation.
Then other issues? Last few questions?
Okay, only two questions.
They are still responding. Then I'll come for second round. Thank you.
Okay, on the question of consultation was more on the report, so I'd ask Dr. Magenhorst to explain on that. But on the question of cognitive abilities being removed in section 10, Section 10 deals with the decisions by the prosecutor when dealing with a child who is, after the amendment will be 12 years, but under the age of 14. And cognitive ability is one of the factors that must be considered by an appropriate a suitable person in terms of Section 11 when evaluating the criminal capacity of the child. So the prosecutor in terms of Section 11 is also not qualified to assess or make a decision on the cognitive ability of a child. But the cognitive ability will be considered by the suitable person when doing the evaluation in terms of Section 11, and then will be considered by the court. So it is not correct to have it being considered by a prosecutor who is not qualified to deal with the cognitive ability of the child. So it was a mistake. It should have not been in Section 10. Thank you, Chair. Can I ask Dr. Bagenhorst to respond to the consultation?
Thank you very much. Yes, we did have the national workshop in February 2015. There were consensus on raising the minimum age of criminal capacity from 10. But some of the participants or the recommendation of the workshop was that it should be raised to the age of 14, and some of the members then also recommended that it be raised to the age of 12. The presumption has been contentious since the deliberations on the bill, because of the as well as the criticism that the United Nations Expert Committee raised in that regard, especially because it can be applied electorally, in some instances. But the participants of the workshop felt that it does provide automatic protection to children aged between 12 and 13
the
rebuttable presumption. Yes. So if you remove it and you don't move the minimum age high enough, then you have children that lose protection.
Thank you.
During the deliberations on the bill in 2008, there was already a lot of information or attention drawn to the fact of new scientific evidence that came to the fore at that time, which indicates that the prefrontal cortex of children of human beings only develop at a very late stage in their lives. And the prefrontal cortex then has is the place where you have your decision making, your consequences, etc., etc. We know that children mature quicker, or they are exposed to a lot of outside information, but that's not necessarily true in all parts of the country. So there are still children that in the rural areas that do not get that exposure, and I think by retaining the rebuttable presumption, we do provide for the differences in the aging or the maturity of children. I don't know what to add to that. I just want to add something regarding the question on the annual report and the findings. I don't know if you guys.
We will get that.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair. Yeah. We will get the annual report. We've got the annual report, as I understand, electronically. Not the annual report. Were you referring to
it?
Yes. Through you, was the doctor referring to that report, or you were talking about an annual report?
It was one of the questions which referred to the indication of children committing more serious offences. That is true. In the annual report, we do find that children are committing serious offences. But that is something that is a huge concern. The intention of raising the minimum age of criminal capacity, the Act do provide for the early intervention for children who do not have criminal capacity, and that's basically what we are aiming at, is to provide this early intervention to children who do not have criminal capacity, but not necessarily expose them to the criminal or the child justice system. So from the statistics that we have put into the annual reports, one can see that the 10 and 11 year olds, the numbers of those children coming into the system is very low into the prison. Last year there was 52 10 year olds countrywide in the system, and against a total of 13,381 of the total of children.
So what type of offences are
they have been, I will just quickly check.
That's what I'm
we do about that? It's in the report, yes.
Second one, Honorable Blousey, Honorable Cortana. Are this the only two now?
Two clarification questions. It's about whether the department ever tried to do a research to the juvenile prison or juvenile correction center of the country to have a research of the most of the crimes affecting the children and also to compare outside. And the second thing is about the clause 22, section 92, which is the local government, where I wanted to know how deep is the teeth of that section 92 in terms to preventing the adult to use this under 12 years children committed crime, which is what will be the consequences of the that on the adult, because in terms of your proposal change the definition from adult and minor to just a person. But I wanted to know what will be the consequences of those who intend to commit crimes via on this issue of the age. No, I'm not related. On this issue of the age, because I read that the doctor is giving the statistics that those who are from the age of 10 to 11, statistically, there are very few who are interested with the law currently. But my question is, what is the disadvantage of leaving the status quo of the age of 10 years? When you leave it there, what is the disadvantage? Of us 12 years, what will be the disadvantage? As much as there are few who are between the age of 10 and 11 who are in conflict with the law, but what's the disadvantage of leaving the status quo?
Thank you, Honorable Cortana. Responses?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Dr. Badenhorst to respond on the question of crime, because it's more on the report.
So the first question related to research done in juvenile centers affecting children, or crimes affecting children. I'm not aware of any specific research focusing on that. I'm just trying to see from the annual report of the Department of Correctional Services, they usually give an indication of the crimes that children have been sentenced to correctional services. So I think that will we will find it in there. I will look for it. But the children can only be sentenced to imprisonment if they are over 14 years. So the changing of the minimum age of criminal capacity will not affect these children that we are talking about, the 10 to under 14 year olds. And then the issue of the impact of clause 92. So section 92 refers to the Children's Act, which makes it an offence for a person to use a child to commit an offence. And it also provides that it is the duty of each of the court officials and the probation officer to report once they become aware of the fact that person to commit the crime. The reason why we've changed the definition in the Child Justice Act is because the Children's Act referred to a person, because you often find that a young child will be used by an older brother who is not an adult yet, so he's a 17-year-old or whatever. So it's just to accommodate for those in line with the Children's Act. The punishment of a person convicted of that, I don't find it in the Children's Act, so I'll have to go and I will have to come back with a response in that regard. It's not mentioned in the Children's Act. Then
thank you. Questions by Honorable Kotana?
The question of
what will
be the disadvantage. So first of all, then, these children, although they are few, I've indicated that it was just over 30 10-year-olds and over 100 11-year-olds that were in the preliminary inquiry during the past financial year. So because of the uncertainty and the way that the presumption is currently being applied by prosecutors, the presumption says that we presume that children between 10 and under 14 do not have criminal capacity. So in essence, these children should not be brought into the system at all, because if they are normal, they will not have criminal capacity. The way that it's being applied at the moment is that these children are, all of them, are brought into the system, and we use the presumption to prove that they are not normal. I don't know if that's because we send them for evaluation to find out whether. So then they are exposed to the mental health system. So they are exposed to these assessments by mental health professionals, and they are in the system, which then pathologizes them, you know, because normally they shouldn't be there. And if we increase the minimum age of criminal capacity, we protect them from that exposure. So even if it's a few, you know, they will be protected from that exposure unnecessarily to the criminal justice system or the psychiatric system and the mental health system.
Find out for us whether any person has been prosecuted in terms of that book. I doubt it, so it would be interesting to find out.
Which was the
child in abuse, and one would think in gang situations that would be right, but I'm not a, but it would be interesting to see if there's been any prosecution. Thank you.
Honourable members, is there a follow-up question? Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Sotana and Ms. Harrison.
Last week when we were in this room, we agreed that we'll get back to the office and rework on the draft that we worked on in the previous meeting. But before I get to that, I need to confirm something that we were requested to recirculate the comments and the responses document to the portfolio committee. And such was circulated. And we worked on the draft bill, which also was circulated through. So we hope and trust that you did actually get hold of that document. Now, coming to the inner document, the rework document, you will note that in the text, there are proposed omissions and proposed insertions, and proposed omissions are in the red ink, and the strike through is as well in the red ink, and then proposed insertions are marked in green and underlined as well. So another aspect that I need to bring to your attention is the fact that when we were cleaning the earlier draft, we decided to technically rearrange the provisions in the very act, but the rearrangements and the proposed amendments are not changing the tone and the object of the very bill itself. It's just that we were rearranging them for ease of reference to the portfolio committee and the user at large. The amendments mainly were there for addressing and resolving contentious issues and to further clarify issues that may be of, you know, problem to the implementation and the application of the Act, the soon-to-be Act. So, now, going from page to page, I'll take you through how these changes and proposed omissions were highlighted. In page 2, there is the long definition of the bill, preamble. In there is a strike through in the first sentence and the strike through deals with imposition of penalties. So this is the proposed deletion of that aspect relating to penalties. And like I said earlier on, we rearranged the provision in such a way that chapter 2 of the bill is divided into 6 parts. And you'll note that the part 1 mainly deals with cyber crimes. Part 2 deals with malicious communication. Part 3 deals with attempting and conspiring, aiding and abetting. Part 4 deals with convict and verdict. Part 5 deals with sentencing. Part 6 deals with orders to protect. So you'll notice that from the previous draft, all these aspects were there in the bill, just that they were scattered all over the show. So we thought we should bring them under one chapter so that we deal with all of them in a sequential fashion. But the tone of all those provisions hasn't changed. It's just the layout that has changed. So with this movement of provisions from one to the next part of the bill, you'll note that as we move along, even the numbering of certain sections will change to be in line with the proposed changes that we have actually effected in ensuring that the provisions are grouped or clustered in a particular chapter. Now, I will go straight to page 13. Under page 13, there is that definition that deals with specifically designated police officials. So you'll note that under Roman figure 3, there is a proposed inclusion of or execute. In other words, the police officer should serve or execute. And execute an order from a designated judge. And then the remainder, in fact, most of that provision has been struck through, and as contemplated in section 48 is left in place. So in other words, it should read like serve or execute as an order from a designated judge as contemplated in section 48, subsection 10. So that's the proposed inclusion and proposed deletion. Then our go to page 41.
41.
So in page 41, you will notice that previously there was subsection 23, which we decided to delete as section 23, but to renumber it as subsection 7. In other words, it will be page 41. So we have changed that from being section 23 to subsection 7. So this is just technical layout that we propose be included. And from there, there is in page 50, the section that deals with penalties, section 23, we struck through subsection 1 and left only the latter part of that provision, in the sense that that very provision is already provided for in section 19.7, the one that I've just referred you to. In page 41. So it was mainly a repetition. And then in page 59, the section deals with oral applications. Section 30, subsection 1b, you will note that there is a proposed inclusion of which may be issued by the Chief Justice. So we decided to increase that discretion here, because now if we limit it to only the Chief Justice, there might be problems of implementation, because there would be instances where the Chief Justice is not available. But if you leave it that very much wide open, there can be somebody who can be delegated to act in that regard, on behalf of the Chief Justice in that regard. So we decided to propose to include which may be issued. So it provides that discretion. And then in page 67, the section that deals with the provision, 67, it deals with wrongful placement, access, or seizure. Section 37, subsection 1, paragraph B, Roman figure 1. There is a strike through there, and we decided to leave that for such as accesses or seizes data, a computer program, a computer data storage medium, or any part of the computer system. We decided to leave it at the computer system and not mention other aspects. That's the proposed deletion that we thought can be considered. And then in page 74, the section that deals with expedited preservation, you will note under subsection 1E, Roman figure 2, and paragraph BB, you will note that the words may be proposed inclusion to the bill. So this allow the bill to be as to offer more discretion as to how an issue can be addressed when faced with that situation. And you'll notice again that as I said, the provisions have been moved around. You'll notice that where it was previously chapter 2 or section 17, 18, or 19, we instead use part 1 and part 2 because all those offenses are congregated under those two parts. So that layout will continuously, you know, show like that throughout the entire draft bill. So in page 81, that deals with oral applications. Page 81, Roman figure 2, subsection 4, paragraph A, Roman figure 2. We're saying a preservation of evidence direction is necessary immediately in order to ensure the availability of or integrity of the article. So this is just to enhance what needs to, how the provision should read. This is the proposed inclusion as well. So in page 86, application of provisions in this chapter, we're saying the provision of section 48 to 51 should apply in addition to chapter 2 of the International Cooperation in Criminal Matters Act, unless specified otherwise, to the preservation of, and then we propose the inclusion of an article or other. Just, this is just to clarify what type of evidence needs to be preserved. And further on, under paragraph B is the same wording as I explained earlier on, that of maybe, which we propose should be included in the body of the bill. And even in page 88, the same applies. You'd find that is or was is replaced by, the proposal is that it be replaced by maybe, so as to allow that flexibility when applying the act. So this then brings me to page 893. Page 93 deals with foreign requests for assistance and cooperation. So under subsection 10A, we're saying an order contemplated in subsection 6 must be served or executed by a specially designated police officer. Earlier on, it was just reading as executed only. So we included, or we expanded it to include even the serving of the processes on a particular individual by a designated police officer. That's a proposed in session inclusion. And in page page 99, that deals with the point of contact. Under section 52, subsection 3, paragraph A, we're saying the designated point of contact must ensure the provision of, and then we crossed out the expedited, and then we just left that, left it to read as immediate assistance. So in other words, we didn't want to restrict it. We just wanted assistance to be assistance. And whoever was requesting that assistance will indicate the type of assistance he or she is seeking from the Republic. So if we say only expedited, in a way, it sounds like we are restricting ourselves only to that particular line of assistance. So that's basically what is proposed in that paragraph. And in page 107, there's initially it was chapter 10. It was a typing error. It was supposed to be chapter 9. So the mistake is on our side. It should read as chapter 9. And in there as well, in paragraph 50, section 57, subsection 1, paragraph 2, the very same words maybe are used. And the offenses as congregated in part 1 or part 2 are listed as such. And like I said, this will repeat itself throughout the entire draft. And then lastly, regarding the schedules in page 112, it deals with the laws that are repealed or amended. And the extent of the repeal when looking at the Criminal Procedure Act is that there should be an addition of items, the following items to Schedule 5. For example, the contravention of Section 8, 9, and 10 of the Cybercrimes Act. So, by including that, then we know that the Criminal Procedure Act will be able to deal with issues relating to those transgressions, contraventions. Then, the entire South African Police Act, in the South African Police Act, Section 79 is deleted in its entirety. And then under films and publications, then the definition of child pornography is actually defined and proposed that it be included in the sexual offenses or amended, sexual offenses and related matters amendment act of 2007. So, and then as you move along and then looking at what other additions need to be happening is that under Criminal Law Amendment Act, there is a proposal that the contravention of sections 8, 9, and 10 of the Cybercrimes Act be included in part 2 of Schedule 2 of that very act. I'll stop here and my colleague will continue from that point onward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. The amendment that Magiela has explained was already in the bill. It's not something new that we add in the schedule. Just to clarify certain aspects, the discretion on the Chief Justice to issue certain directives that we made discretionary throughout the bill is due to the fact that a similar discretion already existed in Clause 44 that dealt with the expedited order for the provision of data. Just for the other sections to be in line with that provision. So that is the main reason why the discretionary powers in the Chief Justice to issue certain directives. In other words, if there is a certain lacuna that needs to be addressed, the Chief Justice may make use of these powers to deal or to address the shortcomings.
Changes Bill that was previously considered by the committee. In the Threat Changes Bill, we did indicate that we omitted everything that deals with cyber security. We made certain proposals that resulted from, again, vast consultation with interested parties, amongst others the South African Police Service and the other departments involved in the implementation of the Act. If one looks at the comments and responses that were submitted to the committee, one will see that 70% of all criticism were raised at mainly the two chapters that were omitted from the bill as introduced. And that is the powers that's given to the state to regulate aspects related to cyber security. That has in total been removed from the bill. And secondly, the declaration of critical information infrastructures, which is also outside or have been omitted from the bill that's before the committee. In general, I did go through the comments. I think we did take all comments into account in finalizing this bill that is currently before the committee. There are minor issues that were raised, but I think that was discussed previously in the committee, and we did, during the consultation or responses to the public consultation process, explained ourselves adequately. And secondly, when the clauses were considered, any additional comments that were raised in respect of certain questions or comments were again explained to the committee. So in general, this is the bill that should be considered. I believe the Deputy Minister previously did provide the bill to the members and asked them if there is anything that still needs to be addressed, that this be considered today. So the bill is here, and I think if there's anything else that needs to be considered, we do need input from the committee. So the bill is now in the committee's hands. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanyana and the Robert. Honourable members, any comments? Honourable members.
There are comments, we have it.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Amanyana and Honourable. And in terms of the draft program, which will be distributed to the committee, the bill needs to be shown. Yes. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, members of the committee, the bill has been redrafted on a very speedy basis in the last week. Again, redrafted. Usually, a bill of this nature needs to be checked by the state legislators. I might have missed one or two references. So, assume it has already been furnished to the Office of the State Law Advisor. And as soon as they do make ready their comments on the bill and technical corrections, if any, that document will immediately be distributed to the committee. Then we can consider it next week. Is that acceptable to you?
Oh, yeah, fine. That's it?
Yeah. I'll also speak to our parliamentary advisors, legal advisors.
Okay, that's good. So everything will be ready by next week, end of this week. Thank you very much, Mr. Manana and Robert. Thank you.
Maybe excuse, please.
And then, we have this draft program, it will be distributed to you today before 4 p.m. related to what is outstanding up to end of November, with your respect. I sincerely apologize because you are supposed to have been 60% yesterday, but we are still trying to locate the responsibility for the work. Thank you so much. We'll meet tomorrow in 2 4 9 days. We are not now. B-4-7-5 for public hearing.